Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Deadite Bites, the No Ship Network podcast on the Starz television series Ash vs. Evil Dead. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
Tonight, we are covering the Season 3, Episode 5, Baby Proof, or as I like to call it, How Pablo Got His Groove Back. This one is written by Luke Calto and directed by Daniel Netheim. All right, first blush, what'd you think of this one?
Oh, this was a fun episode.
All the ingredients are there, just gory, irreverent fun with the underscore on the irreverent in this episode. Yeah. There's some stuff I never thought I would see on a television show. And continually, week over week, it keeps showing me why it's my favorite show in the world. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Last week, we left off with them Heidi and Ash fighting the creepy kid, or Ash Jr., I guess, as we can call him. And we take up right where we left off, and the episode opens with Ash and Heidi still attached by the sink. And Ash starts to notice some stuff. He's like, well, what's going on with this kid's hand? It looks like he's got a chainsaw, and then it clicks in his brain. And he's like, wait a minute, this is a little me. You know, this little shit is going to be used to screw me somehow. What's this dastardly Ruby up to now? So Heidi doesn't want to have anything to do with this. She's just like, let's shoot him and let's get out of here. But he's like, no. I want to keep this kid. And it sounds kind of weird when you first hear him rationalizing it out loud. Like, yeah, I want to keep the kid. I want to put him in my trunk and I want to take him to show my daughter that I'm not just some crazy psycho guy. Because what says I'm not a crazy psycho guy like popping your trunk and having a bloody little three-year-old in there? I mean, come on, honestly.
Sounds crazy, but it actually worked.
It did. It didn't sound at the outset like one of Ash's better plans. But honestly, and we'll get to it more later on in the episode, I feel like however much Brandy warmed up to Ash, even to the point to call him dad, has more to do with Kelly's influence than, you know, anything she's seen about Ash. So, but that's still a good thing because they are really a family. So that works out good. So you've got, you know, the normal shenanigans ensue while they're trying to get away from Ash Jr. And there's the little scene where they go down the steps that from one doorway to the next. And Heidi looks like she's riding Ash, you know, like a sled. Maybe.
Yes.
And they're coming down. And then the kid jumps down after them. And it is just, it's a fucking riot. It's just ridiculous because you see the kid's legs go off to the side. And it's just funny. You know, you can tell he's on a wire, but it doesn't matter because it's all in the spirit of fun and everything that Ash vs. Evil Dead is trying to put forth. And I totally approve.
Yeah, it's a bit of pushing the envelope, too, I think, with using kid actors. And it's ostentatious.
It is. I think a lot of people would find a lot of stuff that happens in this show to be in, for lack of a better term, bad taste. But this this is almost universally going to be regarded as such. And I think they are relishing in it. As a matter of fact, after the episode, what Tappert was saying was basically like, this is my favorite episode of the season because of that very envelope pushing that you're talking about. So you get Ash gets a bunch of good one-liners off right at the beginning, like going, okay, Ricola. You know, when he's talking to her, you know, she's trying to talk to him and he's like, I don't speak French. Shut up. You know, it's, so there's all kinds of ethnicity type stuff going on, you know, making fun of Europeans, that type of thing. So they're there behind the door and Ash doesn't think that he's going to be able to get through. But lo and behold, at the expense of Heidi's shoulder, he can get through with his little toy chainsaw hand.
Is it a toy or is it actually an outgrowth?
It's an outgrowth, yeah. But it looks like a toy. I guess I'm calling it a toy because it's so small and kind of cute, but it's still deadly and can go through the door. It's like the old Ginsu knife. It cuts through a door. It cuts through Heidi and still stays sharp.
And when Ash first noticed that hand too, and he just kind of like whispers off to the side because he's trying to like not let the kid, because like if you were to see somebody with a deformity, you wouldn't want them to hear. So he's like, what's up with that kid's hand? You know?
But it is dangerous. So she's trying to grab the gun from him the whole time and shoot this kid. And one of the runner-up quotes that I had comes pretty early for a Metal Mike quote of the week. And it says, you keep your hands off my boomstick. You got that? Because it felt completely Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. I'm like, I'm all right. Are you listening to me?
Or even Army of Darkness, I thought, too.
Mm-hmm. So the kid stalks and taunts them throughout Previtt's house. And Ash grabs a cord And he's like, all right, here's the plan. We're going to tie him up with this. And she's kind of shaking her head no. And he looks at her and he goes, yeah. It's the little things that really got me in this episode. There's a lot of big things, but it's the little things that really got me. Okay, so meanwhile, back at the trailer, we're also having a direct continuation of last episode. And Pablo is tormenting Kelly and Brandy from the outside and the inside because he's on Kelly's leg. As everybody remembers, Deadite Pablo ends up smashing through the roof and grabs Brandy, but Kelly pulls her back down with a little bit of cool gymnastics, you know, planting her boots up on the roof and pulling and everything.
So that's actually footage we saw on the special feature that follows the episode on last episode when they were showing all the stunt work and what it took to film the Brock truck scene with Kelly and the All Out of Love song. We saw a little bit of that footage in there and I was like, oh, is that cut? Because he was talking about the challenges at, you know, how many times they had to reshoot and reshoot. So I wondered if that particular scene was cut, but actually it was in this episode. So that was cool to see it.
That's a good point, because I didn't even make that connection until you mentioned it. And also, I'd like to point out at the very beginning when they're showing the little bit of previously on, when he takes a bite, she's like, I didn't know you were a biter. And that wasn't actually in that scene originally. So there's some outtakes here and there. So maybe that'll be all collected on a nice DVD set.
Probably.
Watch all the extras. Okay, yeah, Kelly pulls her back down and where Ash's boomstick used to be with a spring-loaded little booby trap set up, out comes a giant glass bong, which is ridiculously large. But in this case, it's convenient because it can be used as a weapon to smash Deadite Pablo right upside the head. So he comes up, takes off his coat, jumps right back down and grabs Brandy right away. And he's giving her the what for. She gets knocked around for most of this scene. And he's saying, you're next. He keeps pointing, you're next. You're going to die next. And doing the finger across the throat routine.
So do you think Kelly knew that it was a bong that was in that trap door, or if she was like hoping for a weapon and then, you know, was just like, fuck it, and was resourceful like on the instant?
I don't know. I can go either way with that one. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like she was maybe hoping that there would be a weapon in there, but I kind of feel like she knew that Ash would have his gun with him. So maybe she did know there was a bong there and she was like, hey, I can smash him upside that. Cause she's looking around. She's got both of her hands occupied at the time. So she just stomps on that with her boot. And then whatever comes up out of there, I'm using it. So that's what I'm going to go with. So throughout this fight, the Pablo on Kelly's leg is just tormenting her. Just keeps saying stuff and being a smartass and everything. So she's done with it. So she takes a dish rag and shoves it in his mouth to shut him up.
I think it was a Pablito t-shirt, wasn't it?
Was it a Pablito
t-shirt? That's what I thought it was.
That would be even better if it was, because it'd be awesome.
It might have been a dish rag. That's what I thought it was. And, you know, at first I was like, oh, you're letting yourself being distracted by Pablo's face on your leg when Brandy's getting the shit kicked out of her over there and needs help. But it turned out to be the thing to do is to shove something in his mouth.
Yeah, we had to have that scene to show us that this could happen, because it's pretty cool that they would have a correlation with that. I mean, it's not something I would have thought of, because you think of them as kind of like separate entities. They're both just deadites, and deadites kind of have that hive mind thing going on to where they all know, you know, what's... Because they always talk about themselves in the plural of like we, or the collective, I should say, of we know this, or you did this to us, or we're going to do this to you.
Right.
So
it's a good thing she didn't perform dentistry on him.
Yeah, then poor Pablo would be
toothless. Yeah.
Depending on what sticks, because there seems to be a pattern, and well, there definitely is somewhat of a pattern in the Evil Dead universe. Of whatever happens to you when you're a Deadite, if you get brought back to life, you're okay. It doesn't stick around for the most part. But that would be the one thing, you know. So whether it's the rag or the t-shirt, it comes back out of full-grown Deadite Pablo's mouth. And she's like, oh, they're connected. So this to me was really inventive. And it also showed Kelly's resourcefulness, because then she goes, you know, she doesn't have brute strength. So she can't just go in there swinging. So she takes the little can of motor oil and pours it down the Pablo on her leg's mouth that says hot tamale and just lights it up.
Which I was like, the last thing you need is a fire-breathing Deadite. And yeah. I was wondering if that was going to turn against them, but thankfully it was short-lived.
Yeah, that would have been bad news to just have Pablo turn around and be able to have like fire-breathing power all of a sudden. And he could just be like, ah. So that was cool to see. like I said, the inventiveness of this scene to have a fire-breathing Deadite. I think that's definitely the first time we've seen that. So at this point, Pablo is attacking Kelly, and Brandy shows a little bit of gumption finally, and she picks up the Kandarian dagger and stabs Pablo right in the chest. And then some crazy stuff happens with his head when he's getting sucked into this void realm in between stuff. And you see his face, his Deadite face, then his uncle's face, and then everything is in real quick succession. And then he disappears. One of himself disappears with the dagger into this other realm. Mm-hmm. And then the physical version of Pablo collapses onto the bed. And the wound from the Kandarian dagger is growing. It looks like it's just getting black and spreading all over.
Like an ink spot.
Yeah. But you'll notice at this point, all of the Sumerian text is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they really want to give you that because he spends half the episode without a shirt on. So you know that evil, it looks like it's been kicked out of him at this point. Hopefully, now that he's Brujo Especial, hopefully that's gone for good.
Or it's like concentrated right around that Kandarian
wound
and it's starting to spread out. It's like regrouped and
I don't know. Think of that because it does look like ink. You know, that blackness does look like a, like you said, like a spot of ink.
Yeah.
So it could have just all kind of coalesced into one area and then decided to just go, you know, wherever it can.
Like it becomes like the opportunistic infection when there's a wound.
Yeah, I could see that. It's almost more gross than a lot of the other stuff that happens in the episode. I don't know why. It just is. But so Pablo is now in a void in between worlds that his Brujo uncle has created that is hidden from evil for the time being. So he pulled that off with his magic, I'm assuming. And he introduces the naked woman with the mask as Maritza.
Mm-hmm.
So this could have been anything. It could have been a leopard or a leopard, as he pronounces it, or a snake. But he knew his nephew Pablito, so he knew how to get his attention. So he made a naked lady that Pablo wants to take to coffee and then maybe a clothing store later on at some point on a date.
The wise Brujo.
So for all intents and purposes, Pablo, as we know him, is in this realm and his body is in the other realm looking to Kelly and Brandy like it's going to die. So back at Previtt's place, Ash and Heidi find Ruby's evil den, which I think is a nice playoff of the title of the show and the original movie. But so Ash is able to extricate himself from the sink with a knife and Heidi finds Ruby's keys and she kind of quietly detaches herself. And at first I was like, why is she doing this on the sly? I mean, the whole goal, the reason why he had his hand wrapped around the sink in the first place was to free her.
Because she doesn't know what to make of him because he's not killing that kid. So okay. She feels her life is at risk.
Yeah, so she doesn't want him to know that she's free because she plans on using that thing to thwack him like she did.
I think she thwacked him with that when she said, so you know this Ruby woman, basically? And I think that confirmed whatever was happening in her head about him, that maybe he's not somebody she can trust. Even though it's obvious by the things he's saying that Ruby's been following him. She could have killed him at any time.
Right, right.
But she's fearing for her life. But I knew once she freed herself
that she was going to be a goner.
Yeah, and it's weird how like we're trained to think that, especially about female characters.
Hmm. Yeah, it does seem
or
that
side
way.
Characters, I should say.
Side characters, but especially female side characters, because it's just a huge horror trope, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, she didn't really like try to take his relationship or whatever she could have possibly perceived to be his relationship with Ruby into any kind of context. It was all about like, oh, you know her? Then fuck you, because that means you're, well, she probably thinks that he really is that kid's dad. I don't know. Never, you know, even though he said he wasn't.
You got to put yourself in her boots because she's been trapped and watched her partner get chopped to bits and fed to that kid. And
yeah,
I mean, here's her chance finally. And he doesn't seem like somebody that, you know, she could rely on for help because here he wants to save the kid or take the kid with him and not kill it. But I mean, do you have any thoughts about what Ruby was doing with that?
It looks like Ruby has tried to recreate the missing pages of the Necronomicon on her wall. I paused it and I looked closely and it looks like it's just pages from a notebook that she's written in the Sumerian text and then posted those up where she needed them and then wrote over them in the larger symbols. So the rift that is actually occurring in Ashy Slashy's cellar, she's trying to recreate that on her wall, but she can't quite do it, I don't think, without the missing pages. So she's trying to do a recreation and she's missing it.
Okay. So why do you think she would want to have the rift? I got the impression that she didn't want that opened.
I got that impression as well, but I don't know if that's its only purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if it's just a way for the other dark ones to be able to come through, like it's some sort of one-way door or anything like that. I think there's some other gain or advantage that Ruby can have by having that power that's in the cellar to do that. I don't know what it is. I mean,
it gives her some sort of control over it, maybe. Maybe that's the reason for the tentacles that came out.
Mm.
Or could even just be a sigil that provided the power for her to be able to control that house. And that's the reason why Heidi couldn't get out the door, why the, you know, flames erupted and stuff like that. But it seems more likely, since it's a mirror of that rift in the cellar of the hardware store, that it's more connected to that. And I'm wondering if Kelly's going to fuck it up. You know, and if that's going to aid Ash in some way or aid Brandy.
Which brings us to our next question. After he sees that on the wall, Ash is like, oh, this looks really familiar. And then he goes over and he starts looking through some pictures and he sees him and Candy Bar getting married and then making Brandy Bar in the back of the Delta and then working at the Value Stop and so on and so forth. So he's like, ah, Ruby, this, you know, CIA much, right? She's been surveilling me for the past few decades. She could have killed me at any time that she wanted to. Why am I still alive? What's going on?
Because she's waiting for Brandy to come of age or something like that. There must have been some sort of like particular rite of passage that Brandy had to go through in order for her to be ripe for the prophecy or something like that. Because that's the only thing I can think of, because she did seem genuinely surprised to find out that Brandy was Ash's kid when that was revealed to her in her office at the school.
Right. And at the end of, I believe it was the second episode of season three, she's talking to herself, but also Heidi's listening as, you know, her boyfriend is being fed to the baby. And she's talking about Ash being the prophesized one. And when somebody who's related to him kills him, and we're thinking that it's going to be the kid because they're kind of related because he was made from blood and the picture in the Necronomicon, but they could be talking about Brandy. If Ruby was able to get Brandy to kill Ash, then that would be completely lights out on the prophecy right there.
Right.
And then the Dark Ones could just do whatever they wanted to. That's why she's trying to get a hold of her so much. So I guess that's why she hasn't taken out Ash. It's all about Brandy. Or trying to get Brandy to do it, because just killing this goofball isn't going to get her where she needs to go because of various reasons.
It would have made more sense to me if there was other pictures of him having other encounters with other women, and maybe him going in and out of that cryobank and stuff like that, with her trying to narrow down who this person was.
Yeah, yeah, that does kind of, there is a chink in the armor there on that theory, but we'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a reason. Maybe we don't know it, but there's a reason. So Heidi sees her chance after Creepy Kid comes calling and announces himself and knocks Ash cold with the sink, and against Ash's wishes, puts her hands on his boomstick and takes it with her. And we haven't seen it yet, but we know that she's not long for this world.
Yeah.
So we now learn, and we touched on this a little bit before, but Pablo's weird brujo uncle lives in a void between realms that he has managed to mask from evil, at least for the time being. And he informs Pablo that his body and soul are dying in the real world, and only by becoming a brujo can he save Ash, or can he help Ash. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't explicitly say that Ash is going to need your help and you have to do this, but it's something that Pablo ends up realizing at some point, and he brings it up to Kelly later. So here we have the inevitable scene of Heidi trying to escape the house. And this is where I like your idea about Ruby using the sigils to make the house almost like a living entity that does her bidding. Because she's got a shotgun. Why wouldn't she be able to just shoot through a door or a window and get the fuck out? Something is preventing her.
Yeah, I lean towards that the least, because of that sigil being responsible for that. I think it's more of like, when you introduce that sort of evil within some sort of structure, say like Pablo's body, it starts to spread. Mm-hmm. And I think it's happened within the house as well, just like it happened with the cabin.
Okay, so it's almost like a quasi-sentience to where it's not doing her bidding per se, but it's just being nasty because it's part of the larger nastiness.
Yeah, it just spreads like black mold or something.
But it does suck she didn't even try to, like, I don't know if she was trying to stay quiet so she didn't draw attention to herself, but if you've got a shotgun and you can't get through a door or a window, you've got problems.
Yeah, and she wasted it on that duck. But who knows, like, she might have been tormented by that duck for all we knew.
She probably felt really vindicated when she shot that, or not vindicated, but satisfied when she shot that duck. She was just like, yeah, I might be going out like a light switch here in a minute, but damn it, I got that fucking duck.
I certainly hope so.
It's the small things, like we said, the small things. And the kid chews off her head, as we see a little bit later.
Yes.
And you're wondering why at the time, but you're just like, oh, man. So Ash wakes up, realizes what's going on, and he grabs his rope, or his cord, rather. He sees the kid under the table, and he tries to get him out, and he's talking to him and everything. And this is where my Metal Mike quote of the week comes in, because the kid throws a speaking spell at his head, and it bounces off. And the quote is what the speaking spell says, F-U. Now, I love this because I grew up with a Texas Instruments speaking spell that looked almost exactly like that one. And those things are an old, fun electronic, and I don't know where the hell they dug this one up, but it's totally vintage from the sound and everything. I'm imagining it's real. I don't think they recreated it, but...
I don't think I ever had one of those.
It was cool because you would type in words, and it would speak... The word, the little computerized voice would speak it, but it would only type in certain words. I don't think you couldn't do vulgarity on it.
Yeah.
And then you would have to, like, it would say a word and you would have to type it, and it would tell you if you were correct and everything. And it was maybe if you're in like second or third grade, it was good for vocabulary and reading comprehension type stuff. So now back in Brujo land, long story short, Pablo has kind of fucked up over time, and he has denied his heritage. And he has denied what the Brujo uncle has tried to teach him. And he's opened himself up to evil. And that evil has had an influence. And I think his uncle is talking about directly, in the sense that the Sumerian text has manifested itself on him before. And also indirectly, that he kind of fell under in with the Ash crowd.
Uh-huh.
And said, so you're, you know, even though you need to be around him for a purpose, you've kind of screwed up and let evil get the best of you. You know, so... At least that's what I thought he was telling him, because he said, you have exposed yourself to evil. So to redeem yourself and to become the Brujo Especial, you must choose the correct bowl between three bowls or basins of blood. And two of them are evil, and one of them is the blood of his ancestors. And what he has to do is cut himself and let his blood drop into the right bowl, and then he will become the special Brujo, which he thought was a beer.
And I love how Brujo just ignores that.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't say shit. He just lights up his little wacky tobacco, you know.
His blunt,
and does his bueno, bueno, medicina chant and blows it in his face. And then instantly Pablo's like, I'm ready to become what I was born to become. And one of the important things, I guess, to understand is that this Brujo Especial is going to have one foot in the underworld and one foot on the earthly plane, and is going to be able to do what none of the Brujos have done before him. So what do you think that is?
Well, I mean, it makes me wonder if leaving himself exposed to evil was actually a necessary part of that path to give him this ability to become the Brujo Especial in the first place.
It does sound like it. It does seem like
it. Yeah.
So perhaps it's a good thing. You know, and his uncle is just being a little bit judgy here, you know, trying
like
to help.
Pablo went on the fool's journey, which has its benefits because, you know, you end up in places that others don't dare to tread because they're not as foolish, but there are benefits to be reaped.
I like
even
that.
There.
I like that idea of Pablo being on the fool's journey as opposed to Ash being on the idiot's journey. So very
right.
Different, very different. Don't get them confused. So I know I've touched on this in previous episodes, but I feel like everybody's coming into their own. And as soon as we get Brandy on board with some agency, which she started to show at the end of this episode, I think we're going to have the ghost beaters are going to be stronger than ever. because you're going to have a super awesome Brujo Especial in Pablo. You're going to have this avenging angel in Kelly, and then whatever Brandy's going to be. And then you've got Ash, who's, you know, the chosen one. That's a pretty unstoppable gang. So Ruby and her book club better be careful.
Her solo book club.
Yeah, her book club of one. It's about to be two.
Yeah, with Kaya.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's really a club.
I'm wondering if we're correct about Kelly being that vessel with Kelly going to the house. Hopefully Kelly overcomes Ruby there. But they set that up for a reason.
Yes, they did.
Damn.
Well, even if it'll be fun. It'll be fun. I can sacrifice episode 7 or 8 to have a Kelly-possessed episode, because those are always fun.
And another point towards that is that Kelly said that she doubts that the Pablo face on her leg would be the most fucked up thing that happens to her. So
that's true.
That's also setting it up.
Oh, no. It's definitely not the most fucked up thing that's already happened to
right.
her.
Right. That's
so,
true.
So going forward. So Ash versus Evil Kid is one of the most disgustingly inventive, gory, and funny scenes in the franchise history, not to mention just horror and comedy overall. The bowling balls, the bowling pins, the acrobatics, the Three Stooges stuff that gets thrown in there, all of this stuff is, but I don't know. The kid crawls inside Heidi's body and then starts kicking Ash around, and it's amazing.
That was such a delight, and I know that sounds so weird to say, to choose that word for a scene like that that's full of gore, and if you were to imagine yourself in that situation, it'd be so disgusting. But I was kind of like a little wary of this whole kid running around, and I was like, I don't know if I really like this kid thing happening again, right?
Yeah.
But then once the kid crawled up her and used her like a suit of armor, I thought that was really, really clever, and I was very happy to see that.
To have a kid crawling inside of a corpse, the, you know, in through the outdoor style, and then animating it and doing it headless like that is just, I mean, who thought of that? That's great.
Well, we've seen similar like movements with animated bodies within Evil Dead, but this time we actually have had this like Deadite created child actually crawl up one, and they create those same movements again, but you know the concept behind it's a little bit different, and so it's like a remix of of Deadite Battle in a way, which I thought was super cool. And you brought up the bowling balls and the bowling pins, and that was hilarious to me, having Ash react as those bowling balls were dropping down around him. His vocal responses for that were hilarious. And then when he misses that barrage of multiple bowling balls, and he rolls and he knocks over a couple of pins, like he was a bowling ball himself.
Yeah.
That was a nice finishing touch of that precarious situation he was in.
The challenge that the creators of the show have is to go, okay, we're going to keep having Ash and the other people around him fight Deadites. That's not going to stop until the end of the series. Now we have to make it fresh and interesting every time. We have to do new stuff. So like last season, you had the head going up the butthole in the morgue scene.
Right.
You had the sperm bank scene. You've had other crazy scenes, and then you have this one, and they're doing the challenge has been met and then exceeded, in my estimation. I think that they're just doing a phenomenal job in coming at this from fresh angles. And I think they have to, not just to keep the viewers' interest, but their own interest in this going. I mean, they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't want to, but it's got to be fun and challenging for them to come up with new ways and be like, okay, how can we just blow everybody's mind this next time with what scene we're going to do?
It's a niche artistry. I think that they're the only ones who really own that right now, having the comedy mixed with the horror and then the ingenuity also involved.
So going back to, I think it was the first episode of this season when Ash says to Pablo, when he's like, advertising 101, know your audience. These guys know their audience.
Yes.
They know exactly what we want to see and what measure we want to see it. The perfect, it's like a recipe. They say cooking is an art, baking is a science. This is a science, and they're baking. Even though it's still artwork, they're approaching it from a science angle, and they have just the right amounts of humor and scariness and gore and irreverence, and it all works together in this one big souffle that comes out, and it's the evil Deadite souffle, and it's awesome.
they're going for that like jaw drop that's mixed with a smile on our faces. You know, they're going for that and they're succeeding.
They get you to think they're not really going to do what I think they're about to do, are they? And then they do it and you're just like, yes, I'm so glad they did that. I didn't know I wanted to see that until I saw it. Now I don't know how I could have lived without it.
Yeah.
This is the best way to describe it. So the ceremony commences in Brujo Land, and Maritza cuts Pablo with the Kandarian dagger to release the beast. And his cuts appear on the mortal plane as he screams in agony. So you've got Kelly and Brandy on the bed watching these cuts open up on Pablo. And then the blackness starts to just coalesce around them almost immediately.
See, I was thinking now he really looks like a powerful vagina because those cuts look like vaginas. They were vagina-like.
Yeah, really powerful vaginas because it's like just the kind you don't even want to. Yeah. We've already kind of covered a lot of what happens in this next scene. Three Stooges antics, bowling balls and pins, and a three-year-old's head that erupts from a vagina. Not once, but twice. And smiles. You know, Ash has a great quote about, you know, that is so wrong in so many ways. So after closing both entrances with a bowling ball to the corpse of Heidi, Ash...
poor Heidi's corpse.
I know. God. Poor girl. Ash wraps the body in a rug, ties it with a cord, and shoves it into the trunk and speeds off in the Delta. And I love the way that they did this because he has the bowling balls on both ends kind of trapping the baby inside. And the corpse is still animated and kicking around and you can hear the baby saying stuff inside. And then he wraps it up and, you know, throws it in the trunk.
In the back of your mind, you knew that this wasn't going to go as planned. There's just no way that's...
No, it would be too neat. Like, yeah. All tied up with a little bow instead of the electrical cord or whatever it is that he had. So back in the Brujo Void world, Pablo has to make his choice. And he doesn't know what to do. And I don't blame him. I mean, it seems like a tricky kind of game here. You know, like, which bowl do I need, Alex, for 500? I mean, how do you choose? And even Pablo says, there's really no way to know. And then, you know, his uncle says, don't choose with your eyes. Mm-hmm. So we have a scene of intercutting where a bunch of stuff is going on, but it's all letting you know that Pablo is agonizing over this choice of which blood basin he's going to drip his blood into. And ultimately, he picks the correct one. At least we think it's the correct one now. And he becomes Brujo Especial. Which he's almost like his own superhero at this point. Like
so
a comic book character.
It was like Kelly was the magnetic part of his compass, or what drew him to that bowl. Because when she said, "Pablo, you got this," that's when he was like, "I got this," and that's when he chose that bowl. It was like she pulled him towards that bowl in a way.
So Kelly's his true north.
Yes,
I like that. I like that. I didn't catch that, but. Now it makes perfect sense when I'm thinking about it. Cool. So when he wakes up and he doesn't have a scratch on him, Kelly immediately removes him from the friend zone. It's this doesn't happen very often, but it happened here. And who called it?
I did last episode because I felt like I sensed something in her voice when she said something. I don't remember what it was.
Right.
And I said it on our podcast. And then I could tell, you know, when they were moving his body to the bed or laying him down on the bed that this is her man. And she's fearing for his life. Yep.
I'm down with it. I like it.
Yeah, I do too.
I would have been, I thought before this scene, I would have been okay with them just remaining really close friends and allies in the fight. Kind of like, you know, comrades in arms rather than lovers. But now that it seems like it's going to happen, I'm on board with it.
Yeah, so. It's kind of like I didn't mind it happening, but I didn't realize how much I wanted it to happen until it's happening.
Once again, they create what you want and then give it to you.
Yeah.
In this show. So Kelly's a little bit butthurt, though, about the fact that he just immediately goes, "Ash, where's Ash? We have to find Ash." And she's like, "Really?" A really good quote from him. He says, "Fuck, Kelly, shit's about to get loco up in this bitch." And his delivery on that, he's got some great lines in this one where he's like, "How bad is it going to get?" when he's talking to his own.
Yeah, he's got great lines, but like you said, it's delivery too. So you got to match the great lines with the great actor, and that's how you get success.
So this part, the first time I watched it, I thought it was a little bit weird that after everything that just happened with him fighting with Pablo Deadite, or Deadite Pablo, however you want to say it, and all of the dangers that are out there, Kelly sends Brandy to go find Ash and warn him about stuff, and just tells her to stay the fuck away from Ruby. And then it dawned on me, after what she did, she grabs the dagger, and it looks like she takes a page from the phone book with it, and says, I'm coming to get you, Ruby, her little speech. And it was like, oh, now it makes sense. She doesn't want Brandy around to be in danger because she's going to have her big showdown with Miss Previtt.
It doesn't want to have her as a distraction where she's having to protect Brandy when she needs to be killing Ruby herself. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't want Brandy interfering also, because that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, because she can't totally be trusted. She can't totally trust how Brandy feels about who she believes to be Miss Previtt at this point, because that's the only person who has helped her. You know, and that's the only person who she feels that. So she's being convinced, and I think ultimately she makes the right move at the end of this episode, but there's no guarantees of that.
Yeah, that's the only person that links her to her past, where there was a bit of normalcy, and who seems like a normal person too. So, you know, I think part of her fight against everything that's been coming at her and overwhelming her is the fact that it's intensely crazy. It's not just the fact that Ash is her father.
Yeah, it's everything else that she's seen. And that tie towards normalcy is strong. It's strong. That's a thing that and we all have it, whether we realize it or not, or whether we think that it's actively pulling on us and our decision-making processes or not. It is. So it's kind of cool to see that play out in real time. Although at some point, and I think we had it at the end of this episode, you do want to see her finally figure things out. I'm kind of hungry to see what it was that she saw, or that she thought she saw, or thought anyway, this being Brandy, that made her decide to get into the car. But we're getting to that scene here in a sec. So, and here it is. So Ash meets Brandy at Ashy Slashy's. Time to prove that Miss Previtt is full of C-R-A-P-P.
It's the way to throw pee pee in there with that poo.
So it's poop and pee.
Yeah.
She's full of both. And so Ruby walks up, and this is where you have your Metal Mike quote of the week.
You know, where he says, oh, I was just about to expose your demon butt. I imagine a demon butt. Sometimes things are pretty visual when they say these lines, and that was one of them, and made me laugh.
Was it red?
Like a baboon?
Yeah.
No.
I'm wondering if he says, I'm about to expose your demon butt, because Brandy's standing there, because she says fuck or another curse word, and he's like, yeah, that, but without the swear words. And she kind of looks at him like, what are you talking about? I've been fighting dead people all day, and you're telling me not to swear. You know, weird angle to go in trying for your first time at being a dad. But so Ash, yeah. Ash tries to get Ruby to spill the tequila about the stupid demon son, and then a police officer shows up, and in typical Ash style, he's like, just the person I was looking for. You're gonna stupid. Arrest her, because I've got a bloody kid that was stuffed in a corpse, wrapped in a carpet, tied up with an electrical cord in my trunk. You know, this cop is probably like, are you serious? Just she's going for the gun and the handcuffs right now. You know, Ashy Slashy or not. And lo and behold, there's a normal looking kid, albeit covered in blood, in the trunk, who manages to say, he hurt me.
I'm guessing he ate all of Heidi.
I know. Where did she go?
Well, I mean, he had to eat her whole head.
Yeah, that's true.
Earlier.
It's true. A growing boy needs his lunch, as they say, as the Dead Kennedy song goes. So Brandy connects some dots here. This is what I was talking about a few moments earlier. She's looking between, at least in the general direction of Ruby, the kid and the cop, and her dad. And then she just kind of walks off frame.
Well, it's what Ash says to her. And it makes sense to her.
Where about being a crappy liar.
Yeah. He's like, I couldn't even make this shit up.
Yeah.
And I think that's when she's like, yeah, I mean, I've been seeing this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's absolutely right.
Yeah, like, what did I do today? I had to help defend my dad's trailer against a deadite who had also a face on Kelly's leg.
Right.
And then all that other stuff they saw. So, yeah. So, anyway, she's like, Dad, get in. So he gets in the car and they speed away. And he's like, yeah, that's the first time you called me Dad. And then we get Iggy Pop, the passenger.
Mm-hmm.
which is fitting for a number of reasons, because Ash is now the passenger in the Delta, and also because...
Iggy Pop and the Stooges are from Michigan. Ann Arbor.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end of the episode, and the next episode promises to be even more intense as far as the stakes are concerned for the characters in the show, because you see a group of people who are traveling with Ash, which I'm assuming to be more members of the Knights of Samaria. And
yeah, that's what I gathered too, just because some of the lines, I don't remember what they were specifically, but there was something said that seems like they've been fighting evil a while.
They've got some knowledge.
Yeah.
And then you have the showdown with Ruby and Kelly, and she's got a shotgun, and Ruby's full of bullet holes. One of them's even in her head, and she's saying, "You know I'm immortal, right?" And Kelly says, "Well, don't you love surprises?" And she has the dagger, the only thing that can kill Ruby. I don't think Ruby's dying in episode 6 of a 10-episode season, so we'll see what happens there.
Nope, I think Kaya is going to make her appearance at the end of that episode.
Dun, dun.
Yep.
Like I said, that's going to be episode 6. Episode 7 can be, even 7 and then part of 8 can be a storyline about Kelly getting possessed, because even when they do things that are a little bit retready, because she was possessed in season 1 by Elagos, and we were actually calling her Kelagos for a while, affectionately. But I think they'll do it with a fresh take and make it different, just like they do with everything. So it never feels old and worn, like, oh brother, they're doing this again. I mean, and even the things that they do a little bit over with, I'm cool, because if Ted Raimi wants to come back as Henrietta for round 3, count me in.
I think we'll still see him in some form, in some shape.
All right, so before we go into feedback,
we'd like to remind everybody to go write us a review on iTunes. Let us know what you think about our podcast, and also subscribe. Also, if you want to find out more about us and other shows that we cover, you can go to our website at noship.net. You can also find our content on the TV Time app. And if you want ad-free versions of this podcast, you can go to our website at noship.net and click on our Patreon link to find out how you can do that. Okay, so we are now in the feedback section, and we have a couple pieces of feedback from Scott. First piece of feedback from Scott says, "I assumed before watching the show that all the stuff with human-looking Pablo was on a spirit plane. Like, while he's going through some trial to gain power and control of himself, the evil was controlling and mutating his body. Looks like I was right. Also, I've been listening to various Ash vs. Evil Dead podcasts, and people seem to forget that the only people who ever came back from being possessed by evil all the way were still alive when they were possessed, and that you don't have to die to be possessed and mutated, though being dead seems to make it easier and faster. Ash really should have listened to the fat lady. Shoot him, shoot him! Tie him up, he has a chainsaw arm. I just noticed Foreign Lady has lasted 5 episodes. Pretty impressive for a side character not relevant to the plot. Also, apparently new 1980s Ruby has been stalking Ash all this time, betraying Ball. Question about little Ashy. He was made from Ruby's blood, right? So does that make him a dark one also? Dark ones are supposed to be half demon and human, right? How screwed up is this child actor going to be when he grows up? So for Pablo's ritual, it sounds like he can control the evil power now. So did Pablo just feel which bowl was his people's blood? Why 2 bowls of evil blood? Why not 1? Loved it. 8 out of 10 stars. A little more fun in action. Less creepy, but always gross. I really hope they renew a 4th season. I think the reason why there was 2 bowls of evil blood was just to increase the stakes. So you have a 33% chance of succeeding versus 50% chance if there was 1 bowl of blood. And
it's
I mean, why not 3 bowls of evil blood and 1 bowl of his people's blood and make it a 25%? You know,
I don't know why they chose 2 and 1, but it does raise the stakes a little bit, because you're just like going, ah, fuck. You know, because when you feel a lot more confident when you have a 50-50 shot at something than when you do a 33% shot of something.
So what about his point about people becoming possessed when they're still alive? I don't know if we really talked about that too much.
We talked about it a little bit, because it was a few episodes ago, and we were talking about how if you're I think we were talking about it with Dalton. I'm not sure. But anyway, however it came up, it might have came up because of feedback, but major characters do get possessed and become deadites. Not so much in the series, but in the show, because you see it happen to Ash in Dead by Dawn.
Right.
So, but that's a good point. The only people to come back from that and to be a normal human again had to be living at the time that they were possessed, because mm-hmm. only Ruby was able to, with some spell from the book, and only temporarily, because it was needed for the plot to go forward, was able to bring Dalton back to human form and drive away the evil a little bit. So there's that. That's all I can really say about that, that it's correct that, you know, when you're dead and you do that, you're just going to go back to dust at some point.
Scott's next letter says, so just rewatch this week's episode. Love the heart, the action, and the gross outs. But does anyone know why Pablo needed a Kandarian dagger for his little ritual? All he seemed to need it for was cutting his spirit's body hand and dropping his blood into the right bowl.
Oh, it's a good question. I don't know. If I was to speculate on that, I would say that the Kandarian dagger transcends just one region of the world and time and place. I think it's a universal thing to fight evil, but it's also not real healthy in and of itself.
Yeah, it's kind of a neutral.
Yeah, it looks grotesque and evil in and of itself. It looks really gnarly, but I mean, you stab a deadite with it, you get results. You know, you cut your hand to bleed and become the Brujo Especial, you get the results. And somehow Maritza knew that he needed to get that dagger. And so I don't know if it's just kind of having fun with the lore of it, but I like the expansion, the sense of expansion that you have from it, and saying, okay, it's not just a Sumerian thing that has to do with the book. This also transcends and goes into another culture, you know, and in that culture where you have brujos and things of that nature. So it's a universal thing.
Yeah, it is a good question, Scott. If Pablo had walked out of that trailer with that dagger, I guess I could speculate that it's, you know, it's something like him where it's got its feet in the underworld as well as mm-hmm. the earthly realm. But it seems to be more Kelly's weapon.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It does, because she's the one who found it and she was like, hello, beautiful.
Yeah.
And stuff. So I don't know. It does feel like it's more something that like you. It just seems natural to see Kelly having it. And I don't know if that's an answer to the question that Scott put forward, but that's what you're getting.
Maybe it's a link to Pablo, to Kelly. Maybe their union's important as well.
It's going to be used in their wedding ceremony. cut both of their hands.
And Scott's final piece of feedback is, I think the reason Ruby pushed back the evil to integrate Dalton is because a deadite sees her as a traitor without the Kandarian dagger, she didn't have an effective way to inflict pain on the demon. But when she pushed it back human, but still sort of dead, Dalton could in fact feel pain. So she thought she could torture their human part in giving up information since he could still feel pain.
I agree. Yeah, we said as much on the podcast, because we were talking about how, you know, he was calling her a traitor as a deadite. The deadites are not going to cooperate with Ruby, especially if she doesn't have a dagger on her. And this is any version of Ruby, because you have to remember in season one, when she was the different Ruby than she is now, she dug up Kelly's dad, who was a deadite, and she was using the Kandarian dagger on him to try to get information, because he wasn't going to give it up willingly.
Yeah, it was more effective than flicking the fork. All right, well, that's it for feedback. Write into noshipnetwork@gmail.com if you want to contribute your thoughts on the upcoming episode 6 of Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 3. Don't forget to get your friends watching this show. We're still pushing for a renewal of Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yep. Hashtag bring back the boomstick. All right. So now it is time for Steve's horror pick of the week. And based on what was going on in this episode, with the discussions that we had during the podcast about the agency of female characters going forward, and the fact that Pablo was saying, you're next, and he said it a couple of times, I'm actually picking the movie You're Next. And this is a 2011 American slasher film directed by Adam Wingard, written by Simon Barrett, and starring Sharni Vinson. This film premiered at the 2011 Toronto International Film Festival Midnight Madness program. I've never heard of that before. I looked this up. It was theatrically released on August 23rd, 2013 in the United States. It has it only grossed about $26 million at the box office, but it's become a cult film since then. I read about it, I believe it was either in Rue Morgue or Fangoria sometime around its DVD release. And so I checked it out on Netflix sometime after that, and I was just blown away. This movie turns horror tropes on their head. It does unexpected stuff, and it has I'd say there's probably about 10% comedy, maybe 15% comedy in there, but the rest of it is all just really good, solid slasher horror. And it doesn't end the way you think it's going to end, and nothing really in this movie is predictable at all. Not even in a predictably unpredictable kind of way, if that makes sense. So check this one out. You're next. All right. So that concludes our coverage of Ash vs. Evil Dead Season 3, Episode 5. Stay tuned for the same time next week, and we'll be covering Episode 6. It's going to be awesome. This has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
And I am your host, Em.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the deadites bite.